Everyone, my name is Simon Barrett, and this is another edition of the Weekend Reviews, a chance to gripe and complain about the state of the world. Joining me in this quest from Los Angeles, we have the amazing attorney Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Simon. That's very kind of you to say. It's a pleasure to be here. Happy holidays to everyone.
And I would also like to point out that I'm older than dirt and did actually watch the premiere episode of Doctor Who in 1963. The TV we had was black and white, and it was simply splendid. You've been watching the Doctor Who marathon, I understand.
Yeah, that was my Christmas gift to myself. I sat around and watched the Doctor Who marathon. It was definitely enjoyable, and it's still going on.
William Hartnell was Doctor Number One, by the way.
Yeah, I think I've seen scenes of that, the original episode. That's a nice little bit of trivia there.
Right. Oh, I'm good at it. Also joining us today is author, activist, teacher, and general roustabout, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Simon, thanks for the nice introduction, as always. Looking forward to a lot of fun on a Sunday afternoon, now that my regular season football season is over. And it's going to really look forward to doing this from Sundays on. And happy holidays as well to everybody on the panel and everybody else. And I hope everybody ends the old year on a good note, and the new year is going to be fabulous for everybody.
And from rainy Seattle, we have teacher, author, and, activist, I guess, Matthew Hines. Matthew, welcome.
Thank you, Simon. It's always good to be on the show. Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me back. I'm just waiting. I don't know if it's possible to have a hook on a radio, but I'm always waiting for that to come out.
Good one. And from the City of Angels, Dr. Gary Penn, our favorite psychologist, author, and teacher. Gary, great to talk to you again.
Great to be talked at, and it's not quite a compliment when I'm the only psychologist to say I'm your favorite, but I will take the compliment gladly.
Well, I don't know many psychologists. The ones I've met mostly roll their eyes when I start talking and walk away. But, yeah, that's beside the point. And also on the panel, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, how's it going?
It's great. It's good to be here. I had such a great Christmas day, and I'm going to be alert and share today. So I can't wait.
Okay, let's kick this off with a news item. I woke up this morning and I like to watch CNN on Sunday mornings. I like Candy Crowley at 8 o'clock. I like Fareed Zakarian at 9 o'clock. And I like reliable sources with Brian Stalter at 10 o'clock. Now, I had heard that Candy had hung up her hat and was doing God knows what. I mean, maybe vacationing in Hawaii and doing a couple of rounds of golf with Barack. Yeah, but I was curious to see who they were going to try and, you know, fill her spot with. Well, the answer is no one. In a piece of really good news, bad news, another plane has gone down, and they harped on it for 3 hours. The search for the plane had been abandoned because it's, you know, dark in the in Indonesia or wherever it was. And the plane appears to have disappeared over the ocean. I mean, 3 hours of harping on. In fact, instead of Fareed Zakarian, they had Martin Savage running a special. I'm guessing the producers are trying to find an Airbus A320 simulator that Martin can, you know, transmit from. Awful. Did any of you catch any of this on news today?
I did not watch any of the news, but I read the accounts, and, you know, it's just another tragedy. I don't know what the appropriate amount of coverage is for something like this, but, you know, what can you do? It's news. They cover what they cover when it's an event, and they won't stop covering it until they find something else.
Right. Yeah. And Sam, do you have any comments on this unnews story?
I will say one thing. Candy Crowley doesn't look like she's missed many of her meals over the course of her lifetime. Jeez. I feel like she's eating when she's, when they go to a commercial break, she's eating a ho-ho or a cup toy, something of that nature. No, I don't watch much. You know what, with Simon, I don't watch as much news as I probably should. It's just so depressing. We're all across the, you know, the only time it's fun is that guy, Anthony Bourdain, it's because I pronounce his name, with his, when he's going into places to eat, drink, and make merry. That's something that's, like, worth watching because he does a good job with that. But just the regular news is just, who's ever spinning it, you know, local news, national news, you know, the free net TV or the networks or the cable, it's just depressing. And it's so spin-orientated based upon what they who's ever paying for the advertising dollars. And bad news sells, you know. I'm getting ready for the compare-contrast of this plane versus the other plane. As soon as I saw Martin Savage coming on, it was like, oh, time to get off CNN.
Yep.
he's gonna be doing the cockpit simulator and what happened and, oh, jeez, and, you know. It's too bad. And so as Peter just said, you know, it's a tragedy, and it is strange though. I will say this: with all our technology in today's world, this is two planes that have gone down, and for right now, and they just, like, disappeared. I mean, is it aliens? Is it a new Bermuda Triangle down there type place? And I don't know. But that's the only thing that shocks me is with all the technology, and maybe just these, you know, these poor, you know, these, I don't know what it is. You know, just that they can't find, or a wing's not floating somewhere. Or there's just no explanation other than it disappeared.
Right. Matthew, did you see this news? And are you as bored as I am with the CNN coverage?
No, I'm not that bold. And the thing that I'm worried about is the last plane that disappeared. I don't know how many weeks CNN kept running the same story. And at the time I was, you know, I'm doing editing and stuff. And so my wife is watching it. And it seemed like for weeks there was no story on CNN but about this missing plane. And so you have to wonder, you know, is this going to happen again? Whether we talk about we have no other news coverage, we don't know what's going on in Ukraine, we don't know why the price of oil is the way it is, and suddenly we're going to be, are we going to be looking at another unsolved mystery? And I'll tell you, after 2 weeks of looking at this, I just thought, well, I'll look on YouTube and see what the conspiracy people say. And some guy had a video on there. It lasted 45 minutes. He had some software. He downloaded the satellite photo of the airplane's flight and showed it. It actually went off the screen northeast of where it took off. End of story. And so they're looking here and they're looking over there, and conspiracy theory here, conspiracy theory there. Well, the thing just disappeared off the radar screen northwest of I believe it was, what was it, Malaysia? End of story. Mystery solved. The plane disintegrated, disappeared, and still, but they continued to run the story for another week, and then they just gave up and they didn't talk about it anymore. So I don't want to see that again. That's all.
Gary, the news, cable news particularly, loves bad news. And, hey, we got a hot one. We've got a missing plane. Is this all that, you know, the news coverage has become?
Well, obviously, Matthew's wife was watching it for hours on end, and people watch it for hours on end. It's basically, you know, it's like Bravo. Like, CNN is like Bravo for the news. It's kind of like keeping up with the Kardashians, and you want to see, like, all of the tragedy and all of the misery. And, you know, look, I don't blame them. Their ratings are good, and it's not, you know, what you would consider to be a news organization. It's like, you know, it's like most businesses these days. They're run by finance people. It used to be, you know, look at Hewlett-Packard. It used to be, I mean, not Hewlett-Packard. Yeah, Hewlett-Packard. It used to be an iconic company that was into innovation and was into R&D and cutting edge stuff. And, you know, the last CEO was a finance person. So what they're thinking is assets, what do you sell, what do you buy, how do you manipulate things? And that's what CNN is. I guess, you know, you're talking about something in the 60s. It's a different world, Simon. It's all about who can make the money. And when CNN sits there with a proctologist position on the camera to look at tragedy, because we could watch it and we could think to ourselves, thank God it's not me and my miserable life. At least I wasn't on that stupid plane. We're just riveted, or some people are riveted to the screen. And it leads to watching a 45-minute YouTube thing. And, you know, it just leads to all these things, and people are just fascinated by it. And it works. So if you are in finance or you are a stockholder of CNN, I'm sure you'd be very happy right now.
That's right. And if you're the owner of an Airbus 320 simulator, you're bloody ecstatic. CNN want to rent it ad nauseum. I mean, oh, life couldn't be better. Bill, do you have any thoughts for us?
It seems to me that, you know, they do sensationalize these things.
what we had talked about before the show is they carry on talking about that it's too dark to continue the search, but they talk about it for, you know, the next 3 hours telling us it's too dark to continue the search. I mean, don't you think there's other things that we could talk about while this horrible tragedy seems to have taken place again? I don't get it. That's just, you know, it's what they always said about having a keen sense for the obvious. And just how do you talk about something like that for several hours and when there's nothing to add to it? It isn't even like they're saying, well, in review, this is what we have so far. It's done, you know. If they shut down the search for it, you put the byline at the bottom of the screen saying that this is what's taking place, and news when it's light again in that part of the world. I don't get it, you know. What are they trying to do?
I'm with you. It's a, you know, a maximum 15-minute segment. It's done. It's over. There's nothing new. You know,
you brought up a great point, Gary. We talked about, hey, that's the sign of the times. You know, if you really look at what the news is about, it's about who got murdered, who said what, that doesn't matter, Kanye West and Kim Kardashian, what the First Lady workout routine is, Justin Bieber, who's getting divorced, any drama in D.C., corporate products to buy because they're advertising and also own the show, what courtroom scandals, misinformation about everything, who's gay, who isn't gay, sports drama, reality show drama, what various people are wearing, who got arrested, how many cars are selling, sex scandals, who got an award, who didn't get an award, car chases, socialites, whatever perpetuates fear, which is my favorite, and most importantly, whatever will keep you tuned in. So everything I just mentioned and everything else that you can add. And because what it really says is what they're not talking about. And, you know, it goes back to propaganda, right? I mean, girls keep telling that same lie over and over again. Pretty soon people believe it, and that's what we got. But it's all about the culture of celebrityism. Could you imagine what Edwin R. Murrow must be doing? Or Ben Franklin? And you think about what the media was in our culture and how important it was in our history of being the ultimate check and balance on big government and big business and, you know, things of that nature to what it is now. And I think we all have our answer of why we're all talking about a effing plane that crashed or disappeared and which dominates CNN. And, Gary, I like what you called it, Bravo for the news network. And you don't mean Bravo, Bravo. We mean Bravo, the television show. So, that's my spiel.
Sam, I thought that was very well said. The only thing you left out was which movie is doing well at the box office. But other than that, I think you covered it extremely well. You pretty much went the gambit on what is news in America.
And I screwed up one thing, Peter. Justin Bieber.
That's a classic.
Peter, you walked into that with your eyes wide shut. Movies doing well at the box office. Let's talk about Sony. I wasted 2 hours.
You actually watched that movie? Unbelievable.
Well, let's put it this way. I didn't buy it.
Ah, you good for you. You got one of those secret clandestine videos. Good for you. Well, how awful was it?
Oh, absolutely stupid. It had no redeeming features. To call it a comedy stretches the imagination. Now, had the press and publicity machines left it alone, tomorrow morning we'd have heard a report on the TV about the you know, box office receipts for the the 4-day long weekend, and I seriously doubt that the interview would have cracked $5 million at the box office. I mean, a totally stupid movie. And you know, it's certainly not something I'd want to go to war about. It's certainly not a movie that I think our president should grumble about. I mean, it's just stupid. You have the, if Sony wants to spend, you know, $40 million making a stupid movie and $50 million promoting it, more fool them. I mean, absolutely dumb movie. Have any of the rest of you managed to watch it?
Not me, but it looked like a stupid movie, and I didn't feel sorry for Sony when they got hacked after I understood the premise of the movie. I don't know what that was all about. That could have been anything from truly a North Korean conspiracy to punish them for making it, to, on the other end of the spectrum, some internal plot by Sony to gather more publicity for the film. I have no idea, but I agree with you. The whole thing is ridiculous, and, you know, what are you going to do? People making idiots out of themselves, it's a human trait. We're never going to stop doing it.
And Gary, you're the psychologist. People making idiots out of themselves? What's your view?
Well, I mean, look, you just have to look at the population as a whole. I don't know. I'm the guy that watches the dopiest things in the world. So I'll watch World's Dumbest, and my wife will make fun of me. So, but, you know, I have no idea, Simon. I walk out probably on 30% of the movies that are made. I'll give you an example. Everyone's thinking that Boyhood was an amazing movie. I walked out on it at 2 hours. I thought it was the most horrid movie ever. It was, you know, it was like she picks bad guys. She goes out with bad guys. He's dysfunctional. And then you go 5 years later, she picks a bad guy. There's trouble in the family. She gets rid of the guy. You go 5 years later, and it's supposed to be some kind of amazing movie. So, you know, would I rather watch The Interview than Boyhood? Yes, but people think Boyhood's going to win Best Picture. So I am really kind of a dope when it comes to this. I walked out on Wolf of Wall Street, couldn't handle it after 2 hours. So I'm not the person to ask because I just don't know. I don't like bad movies. So if it was a bad movie, I would have walked out after about an hour and 20 minutes.
I walked out after 40 minutes, but that's beside the point. Matthew, you have spent time in foreign lands with different in social situations. Do you have any thoughts on The Interview?
Well, I don't have any thoughts on the movie itself. I wouldn't have seen it. What I do have concerns about is that, okay, so we go back to the same thing about the airplane. You have CNN, you know, making a lot of money on advertising by not spending any money, actually reporting real news. And so once again, we have a situation where they don't really have any information, and so they can bring people into the studio to talk about it, and they save a lot of money, and then they don't really actually report any news, which is good for them. So my issue is, though, and that seems to be glossed over by everybody, is what you have is a state who has taken on a private corporation. And that seems like it would be of interest to people because that's never happened before. A state has – am I wrong here? Is somebody saying something? Anyway, so that's one issue. A state has decided to take on a corporation. And then the other issue here is that in the United States, you know, CNN didn't really know what was going on. Apparently, the Obama administration had no idea what was going on. And even now you have different versions of the story coming from every from the White House, from news sources. And, of course, you have these maniacs in North Korea, and who knows why they're still there. And they're insulting our president. And so that's what you have. And the news media, who takes they take this thug who's just really nothing but a sadistic, and I guess his kid's in power now. But these are just sadists. And having lived overseas, it's really interesting when you ask me, what do I think about the conversation about the interview? What I think is the most interesting is that when you live in a country like Saudi Arabia or Oman or something, where you have a totalitarian regime, you're not allowed to talk about politics. And if you do, you'll have a quick trip out of the country. And people in the country, citizens of the country, will find themselves in jail. And so it's really funny that in a country where you are allowed to talk about politics and you people can create their own destiny, people don't want to talk about it. And so we have what Peter and I guess it was Gary said, Sam and Gary said, that you just have all of this trifling stuff that people, you know, and you know, it's not new. It's bread and circuses. It happened in Rome, and it's just happening now.
Bill, I'm sure that you have better taste than I do and have not seen the movie, but I'm sure that you caught wind of the news reports.
Yeah. I probably do not have as good a taste in movies as you. I like watching crappy movies because they're crappy, for just being able to say I sat through the most horrid movie on the planet, and I got to survive it. So I am very interested in seeing the movie, and I can watch it through Netflix, and I'm going to do it. And but I really need to be in the right state of mind so that it's being critical about something that is said to be no redeeming quality, and no redeeming quality to me is fine.
Okay, my recommendation to get in the right state of mind is to drink very heavily.
Okay. I'll tell my wife that. She always gets concerned when I drink alone, but I know she's not going to watch it with me.
Right. Ah, terrible, terrible movie. Okay, so... Well, let's talk politics.
Don't I get to comment on the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure. Damn, of course.
Good comment. We want it.
Well,
we want it.
I happen to think, when I saw this whole thing break, to me, all I could think about was a great movie, Wag the Dog. And I really believe this was all, here's my conspiracy theory, this was all done. There is no hacking. There is no this or that. It's all a joke. That Rogan and Franco are playing a Andy Kaufman-type joke on the American media and the American people, and with Sony's blessing and all this. And they just see what type of, it's a giant practical joke that they could play. And I really believe that it's a wag the dog type thing. And that's what these guys are doing. And they're going to hope, as you said, Simon, it probably wouldn't have made, they realized, They blew $40 million. They'll be lucky if they get $1 million back. It won't even sell on DVD. It won't even play on anything else. And they conjured this whole thing up on a wag the dog type thing. Great public relations, practical jokes to do that, because they can. Because it's all about controlling, and they got it out there. They couldn't have spent How much money would this have cost them in public relations and advertising for last week? They couldn't afford it. It would have been $1 billion. Worldwide free advertising about their movie. And then there was the whole Google. Did you see the Google thing on the day it came out? Did anybody use Google the other day on the 26th? It said something, "We love internet freedom, even for Seth Rogen movies." That's if you want to go Google something. Okay? So that told me the fix was in, that this was all a setup, and the movie's still going to bomb. And I heard it, a couple of my friends, we had a party last night, and they sat down, watched it on Christmas Day, whatever. They were empty nesters, and they said they couldn't believe how bad it was. And just terrible. I mean, so it was all about the hype. That's what Hollywood is. It's all about the hype and everything else in that. So to me, it was wag the dog. They got away with something, but I think it's going to bite them in their own fannies because the movie's so bad from what I've heard. And Simon, you've added to that it's going to be here today and gone tomorrow. It's yesterday's news.
Oh, absolutely. I think it grossed $1 million at the box office on Christmas Day.
With all that hype, that's all it made?
Yep.
That doesn't pay for the catering of the food on the food budget for that movie.
Right.
Simon, isn't there more to it than that?
Probably. In likeness.
Well, I had heard that there was a threat that they were actually going to attack people in the theaters. Is that true or not true?
Well, I don't know. I think a lot of people. I think one of the reasons Sony pulled it is because people were genuinely concerned about the fact that if they were hacking this movie or the industry, that there were security threats associated with it. So. And I don't think it opened – I don't know how many theaters it opened at, but I don't think it was widespread.
330.
That seems low to me for some reason. That just does. So, you know, it was a movie that was DOA. It was dead on arrival. And and probably for good reason. And what could you do? It's an interesting comparison, however. There was another parody a few years ago by the South Park guys, and it was called Team America World Police or something.
It also
bashed Kim Jong-un or Kim Jong-il, whatever his name was, but it didn't openly discuss assassinating him or whatever. And it was, you know, it's widely regarded as good satire, whereas this was just, it just fell flat on its face.
Well, Sam, I don't think wag the dog is appropriate. I think walk the dog might be appropriate.
You think about all the things Hollywood has done. I mean, Chaplin and the Great Dictator, lampooning Hitler, the Three Stooges doing the same thing way back then. You could go on and on and on. All the great satire that Hollywood has put out, and nothing ever came to this. And I really think, like I said, it was all the hype because they realized this movie stunk and was terrible and was a bad fit that, as you said, Peter, is DOA, and they resurrected this thing that became believable for some reason. And the media that we've all been rightfully criticizing about planes bought into it. And I think that's part of Franco's and Rogan's, inside joke of chuckling. Go, look what we were able to do because we're celebrities.
I think you give them too much credit. I don't see them as some great masterminds. They're just actors. And,
oh, I think part of it. I think they Sony is as guilty. They look in the mirror, you know, they on all that. But I think they're part of it. They're no dummies. You know, everyone said the same thing. You know, when Orson Welles did the War of the Worlds, they said, oh, it was someone else who credit. No, it was Welles. It was Welles' genius.
I think it's insulting to Orson Welles to compare him to Seth Rogen and James Franco.
well, maybe not. Hey, Peter, the last part of his career, it's not insulting to. The first part, I totally agree with you. But Rogan, you know, if you ever, Franco is a, if I'm not believing, he's no dummy. if you've heard them speak, these guys, they're not your typical Hollywood, dummies. They're not. And I think that's one reason why they came up with this and they're part of this hype. And I guess that's the best thing for it. It was the ultimate hype, and those involved with it got away with it. Because one thing what they didn't say is that a lot of they were not saying, the CIA did provide technical assistance to the filming of that movie. Connect the dots.
Look, I just think it's a bad idea to have as a movie the theme that you're going to assassinate an active world leader. I just think that's crazy. Assassinate anyone, but someone who's, you're not even hiding who you're referring to. I just think that's stupid. And, it's not going to go over well.
And that's why the movie was going to stink. And I just can't believe that. Okay, what was the threat? They were going to shut down our power grid system if the movie was shown? You really think
what I heard is that somebody had accessed Sony's internal emails, and they were sharing confidential information with everybody within Sony, and the message was, we know exactly who you are, we know where you live, we know all this information about you, and you're an open book to us. People were getting emails about what other people were making. People's home residence addresses were being emailed to everybody. They just pulled down the shorts of Sony, and I think Sony got scared. I think they did. That's what I heard. And,
that's what they got scared of. But I think also they were going to, if I'm not mistaken, some of the allegedly, because I never saw any of them, emails that some of these executives wrote about certain movie stars, the president,
yeah.
And other people, allegedly. Because no one ever saw any of them, right? That was part of the thing, too, that they were going to have a huge public relations disaster on their hand. And I don't think, I believe no one's seen those emails, so I don't know if that's true or false, but that's
It's funny that Sony got squeezed by both ends. North Korea or whoever it was made them look like idiots, and then the president made them look like cowards, and, they didn't know what the hell to do. So, I guess they got their punishment.
Okay. Leaking a movie is not usually a good plan unless you have a plan. And, I'm inclined to agree with Sam. Sony knew they had a real turd on their plate. How on earth were they going to get anything out of it? So, there's a part of me that says, Sony was in on most of the plot. In fact, it reminds me of a situation that Peter was involved in. But there's a story about If I Did It and how it suddenly turned up on the internet.
That was, like everything, a little bit overblown. And, the short story is that, when we were pursuing the book rights, we acquired them, and in a constant effort to thwart us, somebody thought that if we acquired these book rights, that they would put the book out and make it available on the internet, and somehow that would devalue this property right. And so somebody did that. They published it online, and I don't know if it really mattered one way or another, but at the time it seemed like it was a big deal and everybody was up in arms about it. But to me it was all a bit of a tempest in a teapot. That wasn't the real objective, but that happened, and that stuff always happens, and the internet is a great resource for all kinds of purposes.
Oh, and by the way, Eric Kampman told me that all 125,000 copies from the original printing were sold. Quickly.
That's good, because each one, in theory, netted me 7 cents. Good. Great job.
Okay, should we move on, or does anyone else want to weigh in on the interview?
Well, I would like to just finish up here. I'd like to ask Gary, since he's a psychologist, what do you think about the physiological reactions to all of these red alerts on these different news shows? And I'm assuming, or I don't know what kind of psychology you practice, but what's the response? What's the physiological response to these? And do you think that that's kind of a manipulation?
People eat more junk food.
I'm a little puzzled. What do you mean? What red alerts are we talking about?
Well, you know, you're watching CNN, and all of a sudden, you know, you're ready to change the channel, and there's a red alert because somebody's cat is stuck on a tree down on Cherry Street or something. Well, what's the physiological response? Because, you know, there must be some reason that these news shows do this.
I think I said it earlier. I think it's, I don't know the physiological response as far as the endorphins and things like that. I mean, I'm sure I could get into that. But I think the guy at 7-Eleven could tell you the same answer, Matthew. It's just people like to see misery. And when you're miserable and you're not as miserable as the guy behind you, you feel a little better. Mm-hmm. So there's a very kind of, you know, it's the same thing that when you're on a freeway and there's an accident on off to the side, that you slow up as much as possible and look. It's the same thing. It's this dark curiosity of, you know, people just want to see it. And again, it's a sense that I'm glad it wasn't me. I'm just glad it wasn't me. And so we have a fascination with that.
Do you think? I'll let you finish, but do you think that it is a way to internalize somebody else's problem on the other side of the world for me, because they are showing me the color red, which creates a physiological response in me based upon evolution? Do you agree with that? Do you think that that's some way that
you're thinking at a level that I'm not thinking. I'm not thinking that we're internalizing someone else's pain. Maybe you may be, or someone else may be, who's more empathic than I am. I just basically want to get back to the show I'm watching. I don't have enough RAM drive in my head to think that during this phone call, five people in the Sudan were killed or starved to death. I just don't have enough RAM drive. I want to watch the football game, and if something infringes on that, or as Simon was saying, he wants to watch the politics of the world, and he's been stuck with having to watch people run about hysterically about this plane that went down. And you know, look, it's not. We all know that more people died in the 3 hours in the world through guns and through Ebola and everything else, but it's very sexy. We all get on planes. Most people who have money and who have ability to travel the world, it affects us. We're the consumers. It doesn't affect other people. And so it's basically we just say to ourselves, okay, I'm glad it's not me.
Okay. Anyone else?
I would hate to be a news producer in today's 24-clock news and try to fill all those hours. You know you're going to do so much with repeats, but think of how that. I think that part is something we have to look at, and at least I have to, is think of all the time they have, all the competition. What are they going to put on there? I mean, that's part of the problem. Now, granted, they don't put on the stuff we'd like, or the people on this panel would like to see. But that's why it's so filled with all that crap. Because they have a lot of time to fill, if you think about it.
Do we even know what we'd like to see?
I have the Batman TV series.
Yeah, that's a great one. You know, awesome. To me, you know, 50% of news nowadays is entertainment. I mean, they're trying to keep it entertaining, which is a comment about, you know, the American palate for news. You know, they've got to make it interesting to watch and not just focus on what is or is not newsworthy. So, you know, I don't know. To me, I don't really watch TV news. I don't get my information from watching TV news. It's very rare for me to do that. The internet seems to flood me with whatever information is pertinent in the world in one form or another. And, of course, Twitter and YouTube and Facebook constantly keep me up to date. So, you know, I've got it covered.
Okay. Let's move on. I think we've beaten that subject to death. I got a delightful email this morning from Bill. Bill, let's start with military support in Afghanistan. You said that was one of your favorite stories. What's going on?
Well, I guess we've finally pulled out of Afghanistan after 13 years, and U.S. and NATO are not supporting the military, but things haven't changed too much there, and there's still a civil war going on there, and we've decided to end support. And I'm thinking that it's probably 12 and a half years too late, but we are getting out of there, and I'm not sure what we accomplished. Again, I'm kind of glad they're gone, but it's sort of like, it's kind of anticlimactic. What did we fix there? I don't think we fixed anything there, and it continues to be such a waste of money to support these things that don't make sense to me, and the money could be spent on better things than weapons and military support. Is it that we looking for jobs for our military to do? I don't get it. So I was interested in what other people had to say about it.
Sam, do you view Afghanistan as Iraq version 2.0?
First time we went in and wiped out the Taliban, no. I think that had been done. I understood. That was pretty easy after 9/11 to go in there and get rid of them. What's happened since then is, yeah, I got to agree with Bill. Of course, it's all Monday morning quarterbacking and all that. But look, the defense industry needs money. The lobbyists need money. The politicians need that war economy to keep going on both parties. I'm glad it's ended. I look at all the, you know, my son was over there. It's a lot of his friends were, a lot of the kids I've met, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't understand. All throughout history, we've been great conquerors and great liberators, but lousy administrators when we get involved in the running of other countries. Look at post-World War II, look at Germany after World War II, and, you know, things of that nature. We can conquer, but we can't administer or whatever. You know, these people come into the thing, we're too involved, they don't want democracy. Look how corrupt the Afghanistan government is. Look at all the sweetheart deals with contractors and, things of that nature. Is Afghanistan better today than under the Taliban? Probably. But the world is probably better. They don't have one country. But look what else. But whack-a-mole popped up in Syria and in Iraq with ISIS. So, it's like it's six of one and a half dozen of the other, the way you look at it. But overall, I'm sure a select few people have profited very well from the war in Iraq, Afghanistan. The problem is, you look around at all the wounded American returning servicemen, not just physically, but mentally, and how we have fought or not fought this war. and it's that's what depresses me the most. You know, we've only had 3,000-4,000 killed. People, men, boys and girls killed, but 50,000-60,000 maimed for life at a cost of billions of dollars, their own effect on them and their families, their post-traumatic stress that's come back. I mean, I'm so lucky my son hasn't didn't get hurt, didn't get wounded, and is not scarred physically or mentally, but some of his friends are. And you know, I can see it when I've seen some of these kids, and it's a shame. It's a damn shame. And you know, and I think we have history is going to look back at this with a really, really in a bad way, rightfully so. And we're living through it. And again, we're not talking about that. What are we talking about? A plane that went down the size of Kim Kardashian's ass, and things of that nature. And I always look at it, the effects of this war on these boys and girls that came back wounded. And you should see and Gary, you probably know more than I do about the suicides, the abusive relationship these people. It's mind-boggling. Mind-boggling the strain that it has on the servicemen and women, and that to me is the real sad part of this whole boondoggle of a war. The second time, when we went in the first time to kick the shit out of the Taliban and dismantle them and send them scattering, that had to be done.
Matthew, I class you as our Middle East expert. We really didn't win in Iraq. In fact, bit by bit, dribble by dribble, we're back in there. And surely the same thing is going to happen in Afghanistan. Should the U.S. just butt out of Middle Eastern politics?
Well, I don't think that's even the question. The first question is, okay, so where are the parades? Where is the big banner saying mission accomplished? We won. We went into Afghanistan and we kicked their butts like we said they were going to do, because we didn't win. It's just like Iraq. We got our butts kicked there. We got our butts kicked out of Afghanistan. And that is what is going around the Middle East. We're not pulling out. In the Middle East papers, in Arabic, they all say the United States got beat again. And the Taliban beat the United States. So it's like I said last week, when we went into, after September 11th, went into Afghanistan, I knew this was a perpetual war. It's not ever going to end. So what's going to happen now that the situation is different is we have turned tail and run. Now you have all the propaganda saying that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and whoever these people are, they beat the United States. They're great recruiting. And so now there's going to be another huge round of violence. And it's going to continue. And last week when I said, hey, let's just call it quits. Let's say we're sorry. That was not us. That was a Bush administration. And people laughed about it. But what happens a week later? We're calling it quits and saying, hey, we're sorry. But the thing is we're allowing, and the difference now is that we have a lot of Muslims in this country now who believe that the United States did get its ass kicked by the Taliban. And unfortunately, they're bringing in people that are going to continue the fight here. And if you don't think that's going to happen, then you really don't know what's going on. And I will tell you that every Muslim that I've ever talked to has said, woman or man, has said, the United States must be a Muslim country. So you take that for what it's worth.
Interesting. Gary, I know that you're not particularly interested in foreign affairs, but surely you must have some thoughts about Iraq and Afghanistan.
Simon, I'm a little puzzled by that statement. I'm very interested in foreign affairs. I'm puzzled by why you would think I would not be interested in foreign affairs.
Well, usually you say, I don't care.
Well, I don't care that Russia invades Crimea. I'm interested in the concept of it. I don't have a lot of heat on it, but I'm certainly interested in foreign affairs. But if Russia takes over Crimea, and if you say, am I outraged? The answer is, I don't care. As far as Afghanistan, I honestly, my thinking on Afghanistan is, I don't think we're as interested in Afghanistan as we are interested in keeping the Pakistanis busy. And I think we're more interested in some kind of base in Afghanistan that could go after Pakistan if we need to. So I think if Pakistan was not a threat, a nuclear threat, if the Taliban took over, if the militants took over, it certainly would be a problem. So my guess is a lot of the reasons why we were in Afghanistan for as long as we did was less about Afghanistan, more about being there with India and understanding how to keep an eye, a very close eye, on the Pakistani government to make sure that it would be solid and not expansive with their military. But that's about it. If you just want to take Afghanistan for what it is, it's a hellhole. It's an absolute hellhole. And the thing that we have to learn as a country, like I said, I think World War III is going to be a Islamic war against the developed countries. I think that's World War III. I think it transcends Afghanistan. I think it includes Pakistan. I think it includes Iran. I think it includes so many countries where they have a radicalized Islamic population, and that's going to be World War III. I mean, I think it's already on. I think the war started. We're just not aware of it yet.
Matthew, obviously, I want your input on this.
On what?
On what?
On the state of Pakistan and Afghanistan.
Matthew, you said something. You said something a moment ago. You said that you've spoken with many Muslims, and they've told you that America must be a Muslim state. Did I hear that correctly? And if so, what does that mean?
Well, it means that their solution to our coming over there and bombing them is that we should think the same way that they do. And so the only way for that to happen is that we should be Muslims. And I don't think, you know, you guys live in the U.S., and I am really not trying to trivialize anything.
You live in the U.S. too, Matthew. You live in the U.S. too.
Yeah, but I've spent 12 years in Oman and Saudi Arabia. And so you don't really, you know, people in the United States think that everybody thinks the same way that we do. And that is the biggest fallacy that we have in our thought process. They do not think like us. These people do not think any differently than in the 6th
Fair
century
I'm still not sure I understand what that comment means. America must be a Muslim state. Does that mean that they think we are Muslims? Or does that mean that they're going to do everything in their power to convert us to being Muslims?
Everything in their power to convert us to being Muslims. Everything.
Okay, and that means it's war. They're going to do everything in their power in a warlike way to make us think like them. Am I missing something?
Absolutely not. That
okay.
is that. See that is the American response right there.
Well,
it
then tell me what it means. Just answer the question. What does it mean?
It has to be any means possible. Any means possible. Okay, whatever that means. So, but I can tell you that the Muslims believe in peace, and Islam means peace. It means justice. Okay, so that's the first thing. But it's there is a thing. What do we call it? Not laissez-faire, but the end justifies the means, as our economic philosophies of the early part of the 20th century. Well, it's the same thing with Islam. The end justifies the means. You know, if you can convert people to God, then it doesn't really matter because you save souls, so you get the credit for it in the next life. And, you know, you guys don't understand how important this is to people, and you really can't. That this is their whole life, day in, day out, five times a day, going to the mosque, praying. It is just ingrained into them from the time they first speak a word until the time they die, every single day.
All right, so the answer to the question is they're gonna convert us to Muslims by any means possible. That's what I heard.
They want to.
They want to, but they're not going to. They just want to.
Well, no, they're too busy praying.
How would I know if they're going to? I don't have a crystal ball.
Well,
I'm not going to be a Muslim.
All right. All I heard was, by any means necessary, they're going to convert us to Muslim thinking. Okay, fine. That's what I thought I heard from the very beginning. And so the question is, what exactly? Should we ignore the Middle East? Should we not be involved in the Middle East? Should we have nothing to do with it? Should we pretend it doesn't exist? We live in a shrinking world. I don't think we can ignore anything. I don't think we can pretend that something doesn't exist. And I think with each passing day, justified or not justified, the ranks of our enemies swell. And it's just an unavoidable fact. You know, I don't think we can dodge it by pretending it doesn't exist. And I'm not sure quite what to do about it. And as long as we're producing movies like The Interview, I don't, you know, we're probably going to continue to inspire wrath and ire. And I, in many respects, and I've said this before, I'm sometimes ashamed of the way we behave and the things that we do as a country. And you know, I think Gary has expressed this same sentiment. I don't know what to make of any of it anymore. I don't think we can ignore it, and I don't think there's much we can do about it anymore.
Well, can I just answer since you've
said
that?
Wait a minute. Yes,
something
you can just
you
answer.
Said,
go ahead.
Okay. First of all, you said that our enemies are growing. Our enemies are only growing because of the way we act. If we would stop acting like we act and stop creating this super military, you know, Nazi state that everybody's afraid of, if we would stop doing that, I think people would not be so nervous about us. I think it would be a step in the right direction. But when you just turn your tail, when you turn your tail and run out of Afghanistan. Look, you guys.
How does the Afghan population act to the Taliban that makes the Taliban so pissed off? So what you have is you have the Syrians and you have the Afghans and you have the Afghan population, and then the Taliban butchers them. How do they act that pisses everyone off? How does the people in Syria act that pisses everyone off? How do the Sunnis act that pisses off the Shi'i? How do the Shi'is act that piss off the Sunni? Now, I agree with you. The Americans have made some horrible mistakes, and we're a bloodthirsty country, and that's horrible. But that is not why the Muslims, the radicalized Muslims, are killing people or killing Americans, because we are infidel. We are basically infidel. And so if I'm walking to the market in Iraq, if I'm walking to the market in Afghanistan, and I'm of the wrong tribe, or I believe that somehow someone's brother's uncle was really the uncle of the true prophet and not this person, I'm dead meat. So to conflate the two and to make a point A to point B, that the reason why the Muslim world wants to kill Americans is because of our horrible behavior is very simplistic.
Can I answer that?
All you have to do, Matthew, is answer it. You don't have to ask permission.
Okay.
Just so you know, it's very nice to say, let me respond to that, Gary, instead of saying, can I answer that?
Okay. Gary, I would like to respond to that, might I? The real issue here is that people in the Middle East think that America supports a certain country in the Middle East. And they say the same thing all the time. American people are different than American government. And if you read any of my books about the Middle East, you'll see that idea again and again, that they love the American people. It's the American government that they hate. Now, I'll tell you, when Bush was reelected, talking to Saudis, they said, well, before we thought Americans were good, but now that basically we reelected Bush, then they decided that no, maybe all Americans are basically bad. So there you go. But the issue.
Well,
here
then
we're
screwed because we might be electing another Bush.
The thing is, Matthew, you did not respond to what I said. I said, how does when you talk about what's happening in the Middle East? Transcending, by the way, the 19 hijackers were training when Clinton was still president. And how do you, the 19 hijackers from Saudi Arabia, but how do you sit there and figure out that the Iraqis were fighting the Iranians for how many years under Saddam Hussein? The Sunni and the Shi'i are fighting each other to the bitter end. The point is, the Muslims are in a position right now where they're killing each other. Certainly we are poking the hornet's nest, but we are infidels. And if I'm a Sunni and you a Shia and you're a Shi'i, then I'm an infidel to you. Or if you're a Sunni and I'm a Shi'i, then you're an infidel to me. So the point that I'm making is you saying why Muslims want to kill us is because of this. That may be a part of the issue. That may radicalize some. But they, whatever sect they belong to, that's the sect that has to rule the world, in their opinion, whether it's the United States, whether it's people in Britain, whether it's people in France, whoever it is, they want to take them over. We provide a very easy target when we elect George W. president. But I promise you that the radical Muslims in France want to take over France. The radical Muslims in England want to take over in Germany. They want to take over Germany. In the Netherlands, they want to take over. And those countries, maybe England with the exception, didn't do anything horrid.
Okay, I'm just going to jump in. You don't have to ask permission. Okay, you make these generalizations about these people. First of all, when you talk about these terrorists, and I'm not trying to glamorize them or anything, you could sit down with these guys, these suicide bombers and all that. You could sit down with them and you could have dinner with them, and you would say, this guy is probably the nicest guy I've ever met. He's not crazy. He doesn't talk about killing people. He's nice to me, and he's very friendly. But then the next day he goes out and kills a bunch of people, you know, in the street. Why? Because that is his religion. And so when you talk about, you know, you're making all these generalizations about things. Yes, the Sunnis don't like the Shias, but better a Sunni to a Shia than an American or a Christian, or better a Sunni or a Shia than Israel. Okay, so that's the big issue right there, is that, and that's what the Middle East is all about, and it's always been about. It's about the friend of my enemy is my friend, and so, or the enemy of my friend is my friend. I'm a George Bush on that one, but that's what there's all these alliances and all that, but when the United States is seen as the weak guy, and now we are the weak guy because we got kicked out of Afghanistan. Then we have no more credibility there. So then the attacks continue, because we won't just come out and say, look, we made a mistake. That's all they want to know. Did you make a mistake? Yes, we made a mistake, because the alternative is more death, more violence, and when does it ever end? It never will. So it's better to just try to just say we're sorry and hope they will accept our apology.
Okay. A curious interaction. Sam, I want to bring you in. Israel, are they the problem child in the Middle East?
I don't think, you know, if you're Israel is always going to be a problem child in the Middle East because it's a Jewish nation. It's a, you know, that's what it's all, that's, you know, that that's until they learn to live in peace and harmony, which they haven't for thousands of years, it's going to be a problem. And I think the Muslim countries are, I think Matthew does bring up a valid point that on a public relations standpoint, us losing in Iraq and Afghanistan and it was going to be a great recruiting, and it has been a great recruiting thing for ISIS in the videos. I mean, they're able to go into the inner cities and of America or other countries and get people to, hey, you want to work at McDonald's at 6:15 an hour, or do you want to come over to a real life Disneyland? And they've been able to recruit these inner city people who have nowhere to go and been successful. I mean, that's been something that needs to be looked into, and you know they're able to get them. And we've gotten Americans. We know Americans have been over there, been killed because they were recruited to be there. And look, you know, it's amazing to me. You know, here we are. You know, here we are, 14 years or 13 years after 9/11. We are still fighting, like you said, Simon. Slowly but surely, or as Michael Corleone would say, just when I think I'm out, they drag me back in again. From the great line from The Godfather, and that's what's going on. Just when we think we're done, we've done everything we're supposed to do, we get sucked back into it because they are, and I do agree with Matthew, the radical Islam is bent, is not going to stop until they've destroyed us and then others. After they're done with us, you're right, Gary, they'll go out to another sect. They'll pick somebody else. I mean, if anybody thinks Hitler is going to stop with the Jews, they're out of their mind. He would have found another ethnic group to go after and another one. I mean, the Muslims first have to take care of the infidels, the West, and then they'll go after somebody else until they, you know, that's what happens. And we are the, and I think they get us every day. To me, they don't have to kill a lot. They don't have to, when they kill and maim and all that, of course that's terrible, and behead people. They're beating us economically. Look how much money we've spent on wars. Look how much money we spent with the TSA. Look how much money we spent on the budget. Is we're spread so thin. We're all over all this. A budget surplus was turned into a budget deficit because of 9/11 and other things, of course. But the war, this war on terror and the homeland security that we talked about, and they need more of this, they need more of that, and you know, in a way, Osama bin Laden has done more damage. The planes flying into the buildings was horrific and terrible and all that. But the amount of money that we are spending that could be going to other things, national health care, fixing all our roads and bridges, better, this and that, better schools and all that, they can't. It's got to go to defeat the bad guys. And the bad guys right now are the terrorists all over the world. And you're right, Matthew. I think they are the lone wolves in the United States right now. There are lone wolf attacks happening all over Europe. My wife is from Holland and has brothers and sisters there. There's all sorts of attacks happening. We find out about it because, you know, they call us and we know. But our American news media or whatever has a blackout on it, and you have to search for it. All over the world, in Europe, Muslims are attacking these lone wolf things, driving cars into a church, someone shooting a synagogue up. It's happening. Two women in Holland were beaten by chain wielding Muslims. And it's happening, and it's a little chip, you know. It's like, you know, it's just, you know, these worldwide revolutions don't have to be big huge dirty bomb that wipes out Wall Street, New York City, or something. Little attacks, all of just keep adding up and adding up and adding up and wearing down our patience and whatnot. And then the big question is, how do you respond? How have we responded, everybody? Two huge wars, longer than Vietnam. And people just shrug their shoulders. They don't care. They turn our backs on our service people. They get terrible medical treatment, this and that. And, you know, why go serve? You know, so let's just go plop ourselves in front of the TV, watch football, stuff our faces, and hope that doesn't happen in our neighborhood. And that's what's going on. And, you know, most people don't care anymore. They don't want to care. Why should they? They're numb.
Sam. Let's face it, the U.S. hasn't had a good war in a long time.
Well, the war has to take place. I mean, you know, society, history tells us that. We have too many people on the earth. it's going to be, and it's been too much time, and, you know, there's going to have to be a war, because there has to be people who have to profit in its building. I mean, because there's a lot of fuses. Where's it going to be? I don't know. I hate to be the doomsday type guy, but it's going to be a war. It could be fought over, look at the rubles collapsing. The price of oil, who knows where it's going to start. But, it is. And there are a lot of weapons out there that have to be used. You see all the big new ships being built, everybody, in China. China's got a giant navy now. They have battleships and aircraft carriers. And what good is it to have them if you're not going to use them, right? The girls, all the women get big boobs. They want to show them off. So we get all these weapons. What good is it if we're not going to use it, right?
Well, you just made the ultimate comparison, Sam. Congratulations.
And, Peter, it would surprise you to know that I knew you'd be the first one to comment about that.
Well, all I heard was blah,
go,
blah,
Sam.
Blah, boobs.
Well, they don't get their boobs all big just not to show them off. And I just tried to say that, hey, look at the – I looked at these – have you seen these ships that we're building? The technology that's going – could you imagine that technology and stuff going into our schools, going into our factories to retool them and things of that nature? No, they're going into nothing but weapon-making killing machines, and we're going to have to use them. What good is it to have them? How much time – what did you say? What does it cost daily for our bombing our terrible bombing in ISIS? What is it, like $1 billion a day we're spending?
Yeah, something like
something
that.
Something like that, like $1 billion
a day.
Well,
I will say, Sam, that half the reason for having defensive capabilities is as a deterrent. I mean, we have a massive arsenal of nuclear weapons, and everybody on Earth hopes that we don't end up using them. Now, I tend to agree with you that the existence of them does increases the likelihood that they'll be used someday. But the primary purpose of this arsenal, at least at present, is to try to prevent other people from using them. But I agree with you.
You
have a point. Sooner or later, somebody's going to press the button.
You know, especially when you have terror states. You know, I mean, I've always said, look, what good is it to conquer what good is it to conquer a country that has nothing to offer you but radiation? But nothing. What are you going to gain from it? Nothing. You know,
vengeance.
I mean, but to conquer countries with, conventional means, which is what we can do, all for it. You know, I mean, that's what's going on. I mean, we've done it for centuries, and it hasn't happened in a while.
To quote someone, by any means necessary.
Proxy wars, we've got enough proxy wars out there right now. We all know that. But to answer your question, Simon, Israel is always going to be a problem when you have Muslim countries bent on destroying it. But it is interesting. I think, Matthew, that's bring up a good point. When's the last time, I think the radical Muslims used to always say Israel and the United States. But now it is more of the United States. Because I do fear, they know if they go into Israel, Israel's going to attack. It's going to be a bloody war, just like we saw to the Palestinian, that little mini war that took place in the fall. And, Israel isn't going to do a strategical carpet bomb. We're only going to go after certain things like we're doing against ISIS. They're going to go after everybody. But that's what happened to them. And I think the other Muslim world know that. But, hey, let's face it, everybody. Egypt and Israel have been at peace for, 30, 40 years? Wouldn't it be nice if all those countries could do that?
Absolutely.
They trade, they do things, just like we're going to hopefully do with Cuba. That's how we need to do, be more friends with everybody. But we can't, because we have to build huge weapon systems and show and destroy things and take over and disrupt everything. And walking around with a big target on our back. I shudder to think of what the next terrorist attacks are going to be like.
Sam, one thing I'd like to say to you is that And I agree with you 100%, and I want to throw this at you because a lot of people don't know this. The last job I had, I was instructor at the Air Defense Academy in Saudi Arabia in a town in the mountains at one of their major air bases. And it's really amazing that these young kids in Saudi Arabia and in Oman, they are fascinated by Adolf Hitler. And they think he was the greatest guy in history. And when they're out marching, they're out there goose-stepping. They want to be just like those Nazis they see on TV. And I think that what is happening is the United States is creating its own army, massively funded. And I have a book called Killing Time in Saudi Arabia that talks about my first experience there teaching the National Guard officers. But I asked a general, I said, you know, they said the worst thing that ever happened to Rome was the militarization of the Germans. And I said, what do you think about the militarization of the Arabs? Do you think it's the same thing? He said, well, it could be. And so he understood perfectly what I was talking about. The Saudi Arabian military is going to be the United States' force to against anybody in the Middle East that goes against the United States. And one example is, I believe that they're using Saudi pilots to bomb ISIS targets up in Syria. So that's one thing that's happening, and there is a kind of an alliance between the certain enemy of everybody in the Middle East and some of the countries in Arabia, which is actually quite surprising. And one of those countries, and I'm not going to say which one it is, but actually if you come in to like Saudi Arabia with a Israel passport or a stamp on your passport, they refuse to let you in the country. In another country in the Middle East, they don't care. So it's almost like they're almost recognizing the state of Israel.
Well, if you look back at World War One, you look at all the countries that had all those entangling alliances, and that's what the Middle East is now. It's a hodgepodge of who's who, who's tied up with who, who's going to support who doesn't like who, and all those sects that Gary was pointing out, and all that, and all radically, the ones that you think are supposed to be allies with each other are enemies, and the ones that are enemies are allies, and it just reminds me so much of August of 1914, that if basically a sheikh, instead of an archduke getting assassinated, it's going to be some prince or something in Saudi Arabia or someplace like that that's going to be riding around in a car and get assassinated by someone, that's going to set off a chain reaction. And I'm not, and, you know, there's a lot of other historians who you look at the parallel, that's it, because that's the place that's the most unstable, it always is right now, and has so many shifting and tangling alliances with this Arab Spring that took place, because strong men aren't running the place anymore. So who knows who's running Libya? I don't even know who's in charge here. I don't think Libyans know who's running Libya, or Tunisia, or all these other countries. You know, the only countries, you know, look what happened in Egypt. Their military overthrew a democratically elected the Muslim Brotherhood. Charged with all
sorts of crimes. With the backing of the United States.
Now, of course, with the backing of the United States. And I'm sure Israel and a bunch of, and the whole West, because they knew what was going to happen. Egypt under the Muslim Brotherhood would have been, look what happened. And then now they're back
to being
a military
Israel.
Dictatorship. They're run by a military dictatorship.
Yeah, because they would have overrun Israel, or they would have started a war.
Oh, the Muslim Brotherhood? Absolutely. That's why right now with the Egyptian military is what? Helping there's huge problems in the Sinai Peninsula right now with radical Muslims. They have stricter border rules than Israel does with the Gaza Strip. A lot of people don't know that. It's tougher for the Palestinians to smuggle from the Egypt side, which who would ever think that, than it is into the Israeli side. That's a mind-boggling fact. That's how much the Egyptians can't stand the Palestinians.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to Gary, the Muslims actually, and to be completely fair here, the Muslims, and I said before, Islam means peace, and the Muslims have a thing in the Quran called the people of the book. If you are a person, if you're Jewish, if you are Christian, you are considered a person of the book. And throughout the Quran, it talks about the people of the book must be protected. So people who say that, oh, these Muslims are out to kill Christians and Jews and all that, there are many Christian and Jewish communities throughout Iraq and Africa, and there's a famous Coptic Christian community in Cairo. So the idea that the Muslims are out to kill Jews and Christians is absurd, but you do have people that believe that since Christians are attacking them, then what they do is perfectly justifiable.
Gary?
I don't think it's an absurd statement to say that when you saw what was happening with ISIL and the Christians in Iraq, and my guess is that if ISIL came across a Jewish community with a synagogue, they would all be dead. I don't think that's an absurd statement. I am not saying by any stretch of the imagination that because there are radicalized Muslims, that all Muslims are radicalized. I am not saying that. I am not saying that there are not. You go to Jordan, you go to other parts of the world, there are Jews and Christians live side by side. I am saying what is happening now. What is happening with the advent? Is someone typing or something? It's really kind of frustrating. But if someone, with the advent of the internet and the cult of personality that is prevalent these days, just like you know what you have sometimes in the evangelical position in the United States, it's a very tough position right now. When if you want to sit here and you want to go to Egypt, which is not some radicalized country per se. Most Egyptians, if you were to poll them, the majority of them will say death to adultery, death to homosexuality, stoning for these kinds of things. So in a lot of ways, even though we like to think of these people as lovely people, which I'm sure that they are, it is there's a lot of the population as a whole would say that if your wife commits adultery, she should die. The you know, so there's a lot of intense feelings. And like I said, when ISIL came across Christians in Iraq, they wanted to wipe them out. And if you're going to tell me that anyone in ISIL, if they were to come across a Jewish person, that they wouldn't kill that person immediately or torture them, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. Now, the old and rather worn-out comment that I really like is not all Muslims are terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslims. I guess, Matthew, seeing as you've been talking about the Muslim faith, I'd love to hear your comment.
Well, I would just say, did anybody know what the Irgun is? Irgun, anybody? That's a radical arm that got that blew up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in 1947. They were the predecessor of the Mossad, the Israeli intelligence organization.
Are you talking about the Stern Gang?
What's that?
Are you talking about the Stern Gang?
The Irgun, IRGUN.
The Stern Gang.
Okay.
Is that one you're talking about? Or are you talking about the?
I just know them as the Irgun.
The Haganah. Yeah. Okay. There were three factions in and post in Palestine before.
But let's go back even farther. George Washington, they're Adams brothers. They're the Adams. Paul Revere, John Henry, not John Henry, I'm sorry.
Hancock.
But John Hancock, all those people, radical terrorists, right? Yes? Radical terrorists?
As perceived by the people they were fighting, yeah.
But they won, so they're not terrorists.
That's correct. Who was Ho Chi Minh's hero?
Who was who? Washington.
That's right.
Washington.
That's right. Who did Ho Chi Minh work with in World War II?
The
United States.
He actually was working
with MacArthur. Worked with the United States. He was an ally of ours, fighting the Japanese.
Yes. I know all this. But anyway, it's my point is that yes, we call them terrorists, but to them they're not terrorists. They're freedom fighters. So you know what's the so when you say all Muslims are terrorists and all terrorists are Muslims, obviously that's not even correct. Terrorists are people who don't win.
Okay, but I'll pose the question again in a slightly different way. To us in the West, people that crash airplanes into buildings, create IEDs that vehicles
what is
are essentially terrorists.
Simon, look, of course you're correct, and not you. I know I wouldn't say all. You had what happened in Oklahoma City, you know, a few years ago. They were obviously Americans, and a lot of them might have been Christians. I'm not sure. But I would say that a lot of them are. I would say that the problem, I think, you know, it is tough to decide what's going to happen or to understand what's going to happen here. But what we know is that the problem in the Muslim world is what the Christians had. I guess Sam would know the dates of the Inquisition. Is that, you know, Christianity lost its way some hundreds of years ago, and it just lost its way, and it had to go through a lot of iterations before it came into a religion that was not killing people. You know, at least overtly to the degree that you see now what's happening in the Muslim world. So the Muslim, in my view, and this is a simplistic position, I guess, to some people, the Muslim world has lost its way. And I think, I don't know how it's going to end. I mean, certainly the ability to cause havoc and the ability to kill on a massive level, especially with the idea of the internet and planes and things like this, and getting some uranium, is frightening. It isn't like it was where you had to take a ship for 3 months to get somewhere. So it's kind of chilling right now what you're seeing. But I would say that it's way a little bit.
Gary, I think you're breaking up, but it could be my phone. Sam, any thoughts?
Uh-oh.
Sam, you still there?
Ground control to Major Sam.
Poor Sam. He's got to watch his Cleveland Browns.
Hey, why do I have to? I'm waiting for somebody else to call.
Hey, you're there.
Yeah. I'm back. what are you going to? And by the way, you're right. I'm glad the season's over. We all can't be a hasty generalization type thing and say we're all smarter than that. All Muslims are bad. All Jews, you know, you just can't say that. I mean, it's not right. But I do think that we do tend. Because I've been guilty of it for a long, long time. But probably that we do look at the world with those American colored glasses for the longest time. I mean, it's a bad habit. It's going to take a long time to get out of it. It's probably made even worse now for younger people because of the social network, the media, the news is terrible and all that. I mean, heck, I still remember going to see the Titanic and people and kids in line in front of me said, you know, this is based on a true story. I mean, and I know you guys all have similar stories. You probably have talked to younger people, and if they see it on television or they see it on a movie, they tend to think that's history. Or their idea of reading a history book or what's going on is whatever's on Wikipedia, and we all know Wikipedia isn't accurate all the time, or even on Google sometimes if you don't look hard enough. But the instant gratification, one click away, and that's all they know, and that's a sad thing. And we as Americans have always looked, you know, we've always been the best country. We won the Cold War. You know, win, 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 win. It's like it's a football game. And we look at everything today, and obviously, we just talked about it all day today. We forced our will, our idea of democracy on two countries that don't want it. Iraq and Afghanistan, and at the cost of a lot of blood and treasure. But that's the way we see it. Hey, this is the way we think it's supposed to be, and we're going to put this square peg into this round hole, whether you like it or not, because that's the American way. You know, manifest destiny and all that sort of stuff. You know, we stole all the land from the Native Americans, so we'll steal it from the rest of the world. And it doesn't work that way. And we're finding out that doesn't work that way. And I don't know, someone brought up ancient Rome earlier, a militaristic, you know, the Huns got militaristic. What it was, that wasn't what killed. That helped bring up, you know, Attila helped bring the end of Rome. It was Rome fell from within. Rome from the lousy leaders, lousy government decisions, you know, going after the Christians, feeding them to the lions, bread and circuses, blah, 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 all that stuff. That's where Rome fell from within. The Huns just was a finishing touch because they couldn't pay the military. If you remember, Rome, most of Roman soldiers were all mercenaries, and they weren't getting paid. They weren't fighting anymore. And that's where we are. I mean, we're falling from within. We all talk about this all the time. The widening gap of wealth, schools that I teach in and other people do, you know, are terrible. No matter how hard we try, and everyone keeps trying. You know, the American way, you know, what's great, what I love about this country is, regardless of how bad some things are, all of us, we're all on our radio show, tomorrow we're all going to go to work, we're all going to do our things, we're going to, you know, try to make our world better just by doing what we're doing. And a lot of other people do that, too. And we're that great, Nixon used to, and I hate to quote Nixon, but, you know, there is a silent majority out there that make this country run. It just can't make this country a better place because of the what we're fighting. Such a huge giant corporation, giant government, and all that. So we just go out and do our business and do a damn good job at doing it, and that's what makes and the country keeps running on that. But I think we're running out of those type of people. We're running out of those people. People are getting old, they're dying, they don't want to do it anymore. I mean, I've become less. You know, you call me an activist, Simon, when I first get on the show. I'm not going to be an activist anymore. I hung those gloves up. In that hat. I don't want to get involved anymore. It's just not worth it. It's like pissing in the wind. You're fighting City Hall. It's tougher to do. Less people get involved. Then the powers that be try to make you out to be a kook and all that, and your neighbors start whispering. I'm not doing it anymore. Even though I was writing, I have some other friends. We're just like kind of like, you know, Atlas Shrugged, so to speak. Just not going to get involved anymore. And I hate to do that, but that makes my life easier.
Okay, I'm looking at the clock, and it's winding down. Bill, do you want to weigh in?
Well, yeah, and again, I feel really sorry for Gary because he's going to have to rethink his entire week and his life because I really agree with his analogy of the Muslim world losing its way, just like the Catholics and the Christians did in the past. So, you know, hey, Gary, I'm on your side, and, you know, I hope you can survive the week.
Okay. I'm going to go once around the table for final thoughts. Peter, I'll start with you. And then you're free to go back to Doctor Who.
God save us all. That's all I can say. I hope everybody has a very happy new year. And I guess this is our last gathering for 2014. And I wish everyone all the best in the new year.
Sam.
Last gathering for the year. It's been a lot of fun. Again, I'll echo Peter's thoughts. Happy New Year to everybody. I hope it's a prosperous and healthy one for everybody. And hopefully a lot of stuff I say doesn't come true. That'd be a good thing. And a lot of other stuff that I say that would make the world a better place does come true. And we'll keep on slugging away at it.
And Matthew.
Well, I'd like to say to Sam and Gary, thanks. Sam, you had mentioned the concept of we're spending all of our blood and treasure in the Middle East, and that's a phrase from my book, My Year in Oman. So I don't know if you've read that, but if you did, I appreciate
you're
that.
You're on my reading list, but I won't get to you till
you'll
about spring
it.
Break. I won't get to your book till about spring break, so don't be mad at me.
Okay, no problem. You'll like it. And that Catholicism and religion has lost its way. Because that's a point I bring up in my book about Oman is that Christianity fought war, and at the end of it, after so many atrocities, they finally realized that they didn't gain any. Yeah, dear.
And Gary.
Yes, Simon. What can I do for you?
Your parting words for us today.
My parting words is I hope you all had a wonderful 2014, and I hope 2015 is just terrific and just wonderful for all of you.
And Bill, you do get the very last word.
Well, I wish everyone a great end of the year. I hope that all the bad people in the world take a vacation and help us to relax and not worry a lot about what's going on with the world. I hope that we find some closure to some things like lost airlines. And I wish everyone a healthy new year.
Well, Bill, just to answer your question, I'm really trying to take a vacation. I really am, but they won't let me. But I'm trying.
Okay. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great New Year's. We'll be back again next Sunday. Until then, goodbye.